Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. Can everyone please turn off their mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try and keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for a membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied to any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In support of AA's singleness of purpose, we respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics. And when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We assure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The remainder of the meeting will then be open to the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we please have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you to our first three speakers. I'd now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Paul.
I made some notes. It's great to be here. Thank you, Steve, for asking me. And thanks, Chris, for your introduction. I'm Paul. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Sober date is January 1985. And in our big book, they talk about the first 100, they talk about being recovered. And then from the vision for you, it says, why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered, and we can be used to help other people. And then further on in the book, and on page 35, where it talks about step 10, it tells us that, it's down here somewhere. Brain damage, that's what it's called. It says that we're not cured. What we have is a daily reprieve. So I can understand that. But what am I recovering from? I'm recovered from a helpless, hopeless state of mind and body, just like the doctor's opinion says. And that's something I didn't understand or know about. Nobody told me about it in the pub, that's for sure. So when I went, I was a pub drinker, by the way, and when I went to the pub, I took that first drink, and it sent something off in my body, in my head, where I couldn't stop. And I'd go into one of those blackouts and wake up putting the key in the door. And of course, something's going to happen at home. The kids are up, the wife's screaming. And then oblivion. And then comes the awakening of the four horsemen. And what are they? Frustration, despair, terror and bewilderment. That's what our big book says. And that's or I used to work, wake up with year after year, it wasn't just a monthly thing. This went on for years. I drank for 20 years. I drank chronically for 20 years. And there's, if you're an alcoholic like me, a real alcoholic, there's two types of drinkers. There's that periodic, and there seems to be a lot of those people around just lately, people who can't seem to stop. They're here for a while, and then they're gone again. I was just talking to someone during the week. He's been around 10 years, but he hasn't got a year yet. I can't understand that. I can't work that out in my head. Because I was always drunk. You know, these periodics, they can stop for weeks, months, even years. But the same thing happens to them that happened to me when they take that first drink. They send off this craving and that mental thing that we can't stop. So anyway, I got here, and I was 12-step by two alcoholics and an Al-Anon. And the thing about that 12-step call, the important part of it, which I didn't know on that day, because I was helpless and hopeless, I couldn't even talk to them. But when I found out later, they were on their way to a funeral. Before that, they come and 12-step me. And it was a funeral of someone who couldn't stop drinking. I don't know if he was one of those periodics, but he was apparently somebody that knew all about the book, and he could tell everybody else how to do it, but he couldn't stop himself. And when I think about that, which I often do and talk about it, pass it on to you, I think about what it says in our big book about being cunning alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Anyway, I was here a couple of years, and somebody gave me a tape of a man called Clarence Snyder that was sponsored by Dr. Bob. And he got my attention. And at that time, I was a taxi driver, so I had plenty of time to listen to Clarence, his stories in the big book. And every time I got in my cab, I put him on. When I look back, it was a comfort, because I was still fearful, still had a lot of problems, still have them things, because it says in our book that there are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, and that's what I relate to myself. So I hit a rock bottom in my cab coming down the A38 from a place called Moorhaven, which was a nut house, which I was there, a patient there myself, twice in the 70s. And that night I wanted to drive on the other side of the road. That's how great I felt. And I think it was that night, or maybe the night after, Saturday night, I remember the night, I got down on my knees with my big book, and I opened it up where our third step prayer is. I put the book on my wife's lap, got down in front of her, and said that third step prayer. The room never lit up, or like it did for Bill, but there was that feeling inside, everything's going to be all right, mate. And I looked out of a window of a house that I hated, and that feeling come to me. And after that, quite quickly after that, I got into the rest of the steps. And but there was something missing. And what was missing was Clarence would talk about the steps, but you can only talk about 10, 11, and 12 so much. And that's a bit that I didn't really understand. Anyway, the opportunity come. Somebody was talking about miracles. The opportunity come for me to go over to the, I wanted to find out about more about Clarence. And I made a phone call to where he said he was from, in Orlando, Florida. And the fellow that answered the phone was an alcoholic. He knew of Clarence. And in a roundabout way, he got his address to his wife. Clarence had passed away, but his wife was still living. And she sent me some stuff. And I ended up over there in Clarence's house, in his old office. That's where I slept, surrounded by a lot of his books and things. And remember, he was sponsored by a fellow, Dr. Bob. And Clarence had tucked this fellow through the steps in the 70s. And he was called Steve Foreman. And I went through the steps with Steve over a weekend. And I got the answer of how to live the rest of my life on 10, 11, and 12. And when you look at the steps, you know, you make alcohol's mentioned once. You never hear it again, man, in the rest of the steps. And that was the key that brought us here. Alcohol. And the most important part of that step was the unmanageability of my life. And I could see that because I lost everything. I was one of those last gaspers. That's why I was so attracted to Clarence. And that's the way, you know, when you read the stories in the back of the book, that's all they were. They were last gaspers. And we are miracles. I look at my life and I think, yeah, I could give you maybe 8 or 9 times when I should have died over the years. So so I got a start. I'm a real alcoholic. Step one is the only one I had to do 100%. I had to have it inside here in my heart. And I could come to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And right away, I go to the sanity bit. I knew I was nuts, and everybody around me knew that. And if you're not nuts, you don't belong here. Right? All we have to do is think about our last drink. Yeah, crazy. So then I said, I made this decision to turn my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And at that time, God to me was an old man in a long cloak writing dirty things in a book about me. That was my conception of God. So you got to be really fearful to get down on your knees and give your life over to a character like that. But that's what I was. I felt bad here. I didn't want to drink. Drink didn't come into it. Anyway, this 4, 5, 6, and 7 defect. Sin. That's what it's all about, man. Let me read this out to you. Resentment and anger. Fear, cowardice, self-pity. The world owed me something. Get on the pity pot. Self-justification, self-importance, that ego. Self-condemnation and guilt, full of guilt and shame. Couldn't look at myself in the mirror. Lying, evasiveness and dishonesty, impatience, hate, false pride, phoniness and denial, pride. Cruel as a grave. That's what God calls it. And he's right. Because that's what kills us. That's what kills a lot of alcoholics. No, I don't need help. I can do it myself. Pride. Jealousy. Very strong. Yeah, I've been jealous. Hard to admit to, but I have. Envy, laziness. I'll go top of the class with that one. Lazy. Procrastination. Now, what's that? I don't know any of these things. I never knew anything about those things. Putting things off. I'll do that tomorrow. Get that sponsor to do the steps tomorrow. Insincerity. I had to ask the wife that, and she said, yes, you were. Negative thinking. Never had a positive thought in my head. It was always negative. Immoral thinking, the lust. Got me into a lot of trouble. A lot of fear around it. A lot of guilt around it. Perfectionism. What I am. But when it becomes a problem is when you expect other people to be like it. And they're not. Especially at home. Intolerance. Criticizing. That loose talk that goes on. Gossip and greed. There we are. 20 of them. 20 sins. I have 14 of those things, and 5 shone out more than the rest, my pets, as I call them. And then that 7th step says, I humbly ask God, humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings, my defects, my sins. And when I got up from that step, I was clean. You see, our lives, it's like a tape. That 20 years or whatever was on that tape, all the lying, all the dishonesty, all the resentments is on the tape. It's in the bin. And I got that new start. 1987, I got that new start. That's when I went through the steps very quickly. But if I'm going to go into this new life, I have to clean up the past. That's what 89 is all about. I made that list. I put my name on top because he could see all that guilt and shame. My wife, my kids, mum and dad, people I owed money to, my brothers. And I become willing to make amends to them all. Some people weren't on the list, and I would bump into them and make amends. This is years later after I went through some the ones that were on the list. There was one man that wasn't on the list, the man in the van, I call him. There's no way, man, that I'm going to go to him. But through time, God worked on my heart, and that willingness come. And I knew then that God was going to give me that opportunity. And he did. And it was in a doctor's surgery. We were going to see the same doctor. And I went over to him and kept it really simple. Do you remember me? And he looked at me and shook his head. And I told him about the van. And he went in to see my doctor. After I made amends to him. And then he come out. And I went in and told my doctor what I had done. Because he knew all about me. I'd give him a big buck as well. And I come out of there, man. On a cloud. Pink cloud. You know something? I'm still on that. Eh? And every time we met after that. We were like two lost cousins. And time went past. And I used to see him He retired. And I started to visit him. He used to sit out in the porch. And he asked me for help. He was drinking a lot. And I gave him a big book. And he read that. And he, in so many words, he said, "Really, it's not for me." And that man stayed there and he started to, you know, go downhill. And he died of this illness. He fell down the stairs. So there you are. That's just a reminder. But I'm glad that I had that chance to make amends to that man before he had died. Anyway, I went through that list. And now I'm on 10, 11, and 12. See, we're here. We're here for an hour and a half. But I've got to go out that door, man. I've got to walk down the road, get in my car, get on the road with the other drivers. And I can give you an example of this. A few months ago, I was driving up from the station onto Motley Plain, and I've got to get into the outside lane to go up to Manamead. And I'm in front of this driver trying to get into the right-hand lane, and he wouldn't let me in. I even drove a bit faster in front of him. And no man, he ain't going to let me in. And the driver behind let me in, and I'm behind him now. And I can see him looking at me in the mirror. And it really caught my laughter. And I started to laugh, and I mean laugh. And in my head, I thought, give him a little wave. So I'm laughing, giving him a wave. And he was getting on in, hey, he was a young man. And he went his merry way, and I went my merry way. And I think it was the next day, like I'm very slow. And the next day I thought about it, and I thought to myself, I don't want to be like that. And it made me even more want to be more courteous on the road. See? Now, when I first started to do this, I had this list in front of my steering wheel. Okay? And I would go down, when something happened inside me, I would go down my list. And, oh, yeah. Yeah, you didn't go on. You didn't go on the taxi rank on the co-op. And I would go down that list, just two down, fear. And if you're an alcoholic, you know all about fear, right? Because I used to go to my wife and tell her about this fear. And she would say, what are you fearing about? And it's that type of fear, you can't even mention it. You don't even know what it is. And if you're an alcoholic, you know all about that. And somebody talked about, and thanks, by the way, for your shares. And somebody mentioned something about the alcoholic. We're different. Right? We're different from those earth people, right, out there. And the thing that why we're different is we do things by feeling in emotions. They do things by thinking. They think and we emote. All right. We didn't want to do anything until it feels bad enough. And if you sponsor people, you know what I'm talking about. Right. I've just took on the Free Amigos and they're in and out like yogos. That's what my wife called them. Anyway, so it's that 10th step. See, I've done 9 steps. I don't have to ever go back unless I'm here trying to, you know, talking about them or I'm taking somebody else through the steps. That's when I've got to go. And by the way, while I'm doing that, I'm learning more about myself with those things, okay? So all I have to be worried about is that 10, 11, and 12. Talked a bit about the 10th step. The 11th step has become very, very important to me. Every day I do my readings in the morning. And that's what I was doing today. I knew I was coming here and praying and praying, writing a few things down, what I was going to talk about. And more than likely, I'm talking about something completely different than what I put down. And when I go home tonight, see, gratitude is very, very important to us. It sends, I believe it sends a lot of people back than anything else, not being grateful. Every time I get in my car, thank you, Lord, in my car, right away. And that feeling. And when I go to church on Sunday, that's when I'm, thank you, Lord. I'm in the church, I'm praising, coming to praise you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. 2 minutes. Now, if you don't take anything else away with what I said tonight, this might help someone. You see our big book? What a thing that is, man. I love that big book. I'm not a big book basher, because there's nothing bashing about that book. It's all about love. It's all about forgiveness. Forgiving ourselves. Forgiving, I was abused as a child. 11-year-old, Jenna went through that. And when you listen to the news, now it's all about it, man. Somebody, one of them's just got 16 years. But I had to forgive. I had to forgive myself. And I wanted other people to forgive me. But that had to come from them. And sometimes they don't. But that's their problem. It's water over the dam. Now, our big book is about seeking and finding God. And God's not lost. We're the ones who are lost. And if anybody tells you anything different, they're lying to you. And I'm really, really grateful to be here, sober. And what a life. I feel great inside. That peace. And that's, I think, is what we were looking for all the time. Thanks for listening to me.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Alexis and I'm an alcoholic. Could everyone please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try to keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In view of our singleness of purpose, we would respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics, and that when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be opened for sharing from the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you, everyone. I would now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Ginge.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Ginge, I'm an alcoholic. Can you see me? This pedestal looks bigger than me. It reminds me when my uncle died in Scotland and I had to go and do a little talk about him. And my older brother didn't want to do it, the younger brother didn't want to do it. He said, you go and do it. I said, that's fine, I'll do it. And I stood up, I'll tell you what, it was like this. And the sister and the brother started to giggle because all they could hear was a voice. They couldn't see me. And I'll see you later, Andy, because you did tell me that there's buttons and pedestals and that. I thought, that can't be, because I can't remember this being like this the last time I was here. And where's Wayne? Yeah, thank you, Wayne, for inviting me along. Two things you should never do in Alcoholics Anonymous. The first one is never pick up the first drink. And the second one is don't pick up a nickname. Because I'm more follically challenged today. The name Ginger has gone a long, long time ago. And some members feel that I've been dry so long I'm an actual fire hazard. And I'd like to thank the three previous sharers because it's not easy standing up here, is it? Would anyone like to swap places with me now? Because I still get anxiety. I still get fear. I still think to myself, good God, when I share tonight, am I going to carry a good message? Or are people going to look at this and think, well, if that's all that AA's got to offer, I'm going to come back to this. And I didn't have a long drinking career. Believe me, my drinking career spanned 10 years. That was it. 16 to 26 years of age. And I'm not going to bore you with all my drunkalogue, my escapades, except to say that I knew fear at a very young age. I knew fear in the classroom at 8 and 9 years of age. I used to dread the poetry book coming up to my turn. We used to sit in rows then. And I think, oh, please God, let the bell ring for playtime. Don't let it come to me because I'd have to stand up. My heart would start to palpitate and I'd start to break out in a sweat and I'd want to faint. So I knew fear before I took to drinking alcohol. It was unfounded fears. I don't know what caused it, but they were unfounded fears, but they were very, very real to me. And I grew up with that. And when I left school with no educational qualifications whatsoever, except an A-level, in guilt, because I was brought up a Catholic. And I was doomed to the fires of hell at 9 years of age for missing Mass on a Sunday, and for having lustful thoughts. Imagine that, a young boy growing up, being doomed to the fires of hell. So I left with no educational qualifications. And when I got to the age of 16, I became an apprentice. And I found alcohol. And do you know what? It was my nectar juice. Because it lifted all that fear, lifted all that anxiety, and it gave me confidence. And I thought, my God, this is wonderful. So I took to it like a duck takes to water. And when I got to 18 years of age, I joined the Royal Navy. Now, I'm not going to bore you with all my sailing around the high seas and that, but when I joined the Royal Navy, I then got involved in a drinking scene, which if there's any sailors in here or servicemen in here tonight, it was there. And when you got to the age of 20, you got your tot of rum. Now, it's a conundrum I could never figure out. At 80 years of age, you could fight and die for your country. But you had to wait till you were 20 years of age to get a tot of rum. Because it said it was too dangerous to be given rum to 18-year-olds. You had to wait till you're 20. Strange. And I ended up in a mental institution which was called Netley. Any serviceman will know Netley. I was about 21 years of age and I was in Gibraltar and it was the first bout of DTs that I'd had at 21 years of age. An unfortunate accident happened a sailor was killed, one of my mates was killed, but I had to go to an Admiralty interview the following day. And I was in the horrors. I was in the absolute horrors because we'd been drinking for 2 or 3 days. But I can recall having to put my number one uniform on, go to this Admiral as an Admiral and a Captain. And what happened here? What was going on? I said, well, I can't recall everything. I said, but we were drinking. We were coming back to the ship. And I said, I just left my mates, and one fell down a dry dock and one fell on top of him. He said, he says, well, what actually went on? Were you in a fight? I said, no. I said, but I can vaguely recall men with spears coming out of the clouds, chasing us back to the ship. Well, my feet didn't touch the deck. I was removed from the ship instantly. And I was sent to the mental institution because that was the first part of DTs I could recall. I still to this day don't know what happened. But I was removed. And when I got to Netley, I got asked the usual questions. Did I have any financial problems? I said, no, I got paid fortnightly. Did I have any sexual problems? Always when you're in the mental institution, what interests your sex life? I said, no, like most sailors. And then they said, have you got a drinking problem? I said, no, because at that age, I didn't think that I had a drinking problem. Looking back on it now, I was a raving alcoholic. They said, okay, you go back to the ship. So I returned to the Royal Navy. Shortly after that, I'm home on leave. My drinking continued, the sickness continued. And you wouldn't tell I was an alcoholic. You wouldn't be able to point your finger at me and say, that guy looks like an alcoholic. A, I was always well-groomed. Highly polished shoes, creases in my trousers, collar and tie, suit or maybe a jacket and flannels. So you wouldn't point your finger at me and say, that guy looks like an alcoholic. Because I was well-groomed. But I used that well-grooming as an act to get off with being a drunk. Because I would go into a restaurant, I would walk in, and then after a period of time, I had a sickness problem. I would vomit. You could be in there with your wife or your boyfriend or your girlfriend, and I would vomit. And I wonder why all the barmen and all these restaurant owners are throw me out. I thought, good God. But anyway, I got home one day and I crawled out the back of a car, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I lived in my mum's council house in Farnborough near Aldershot. And I said to her, I said, Mum, I said, I think I've got a drinking problem. She said, I know you have, but I don't know what to do about it. So she rung the Samaritans in Guildford. And they said, it's not us you want, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. That was my first contact with AA, 22 years of age, and this guy called Charles, and he came along one Saturday afternoon. He sat, and I had to keep going to the sink and vomiting into the sink, and he just kept telling me, he wasn't long out of Netley himself, but he kept telling me about AA, about the first drink. I thought, good God, here I'm 22. But anyway, I was in the Royal Navy, and I still had to do a job, and I went back to sea. But now I knew I was an alcoholic. And I tried very, very hard. Sorry? Slapping my legs. Sorry?
Stop slapping the legs.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said stop slapping your legs. I didn't realise that I was. However, where was I now? I've lost track now, slapping my legs. yes, the Samaritans, this Alcoholics Anonymous, this guy Charles came along. And I had to keep going to the sink to vomit into the sink because I felt that bad. I couldn't hold anything down. I couldn't hold down milk, water, nothing. Just kept coming back up. But that was my contact with AA. I attended a few meetings and went back to sea. And, of course, this disease carried on. Now, the Navy, in their wisdom, sent me to the West Indies, and I was totally addicted to rum. And they sent me out to the West Indies, and I spent 14 months way out in these islands. It looks nice on the telly, doesn't it? Palm beaches, sand. If you're an active alcoholic, it's not a very nice place to be, because I suffered badly out there. And when I came back in 1973, the Navy decided that they would put me into the alcoholic unit, back to Netley. But the alcoholic units at the end of 1973 are not like treatment centres are today. A treatment centre today is totally different to Netley. Netley had bars on the windows. We had big, hairy-assed physical training instructors that felt that the way to beat this disease was to get you fit. So they'd take you for runs with packs on your back, or maybe into the gymnasium for a bit of circuit training. They felt that if they got you physically well, you'd be mentally well, and we could return you back to the Army or the Navy. Didn't work for me. The Army discharged me from the Navy. And I left the Navy in the May of 1974, and I ended up on the embankment in London, drinking on the embankment in London near Vauxhall Bridge. Now, I could survive in the summertime drinking on the embankment. I never did a winter. I didn't do a winter. I don't think I'd be tough enough to handle a winter up there. But I certainly did the summer. And then this day came. My sister lived in Twickenham, and I was getting very short of money. And I said, right, I'm going to go and see my sister. And I went to see her, and the brother-in-law said, let's go down to a beer keller. Now, if anyone knows London Twickenham, there's the bridge between Twickenham and Richmond. There used to be a beer keller the other side. I went down to that beer keller. By this time, I was very dangerously paranoid. And I mean dangerously paranoid. And that night is when I had my last drink. That was in August of 1974. And what simply happened was, that morning I had no intention of stopping drinking. By the end of the day, I had thrown the towel in. I had taken step one. And I returned with my tail between my legs, and I joined the Aldershot and Farnborough Piss and Vomit Group. That's what we lovingly called it. It was a smashing group to get sober in. We had all types in that group. And little Tommy said to me, he said, little man, he says, do you want to live or do you want to die? I said, Tom, I want to live. He said, well, if you want to live, do it AA's way. He said, if you want to die, keep doing it your way. And I think you already shared it, Linda, you go mad and we'll die if we carry on drinking. Now, I know there's a guy in here tonight who's only a couple of days off it. I know that. And I wish that guy, and I just hope and pray that that guy listens to what's been shared tonight by the three previous speakers and realizes that there is a way out. There is a way out, and this is the way out. AA is the way out. When I threw the towel in, I thought, my God, I'm 26 years of age. I was single. I had a full head of ginger hair then as well. I thought, what am I going to do? Well, a couple of weeks into this fellowship, a guy called Harry the Gas got me a job at the meteorological office in Bracknell. And I'll be made redundant a couple of times, but, you know, I retired a couple of months ago. I got the 65 in August, and I've not been out of work since I threw the towel in. And yet I was unemployable. And in 1977, I went to Libya. I put the checkbook before the big book. I'm going to have to grab a drink of water here. The light's been very parched tonight. Anyway, I went to Libya. And on the way out, I met two nice guys. One of them was Sanji, and he was an ex-major in the Army. And the other guy was Canadian Bob. Canadian Bob's the guy who started AA in Britain in the March of 1947. And I met him in 1977 out in Malta on the way out to Libya. Now, these two guys spent a bit of time with me on the 12 steps. And it was Sam G that explained to me that those 12 steps don't go up anywhere. They go down. But they go down inside the alcoholic. They go down to arrest this disease and to set us free. And it was Canadian Bob that taught me the importance of the big book. Now, the big book to me, I'm like a, I think they call it a big book SS fanatic. I'm a big book SS man. I have different reasons for relying on the big book than maybe you do. Because in Libya, that's all I had, was the big book. I didn't have any AA meetings, I didn't have any AA contacts, but I had the big book. And that's what kept me going the months that I was out there. Now, the reason I went there, as I said, is because I put the checkbook before the big book. I hadn't been dry very long, just a couple of years, but I went out there to earn the big money. Unfortunately for me, there's a bit of insanity because, you see, I hadn't done a great deal about the 12 steps, and I certainly hadn't done a great deal about the study in the big book. And I went out there, and I wasn't out there long when I realized I was on thin ice. Now, I don't know if anyone's been to the Sahara Desert, but if you have, it's very, very hot, very, very dry, and very, very thirsty. And this night, I went back to the cabin, had a shower, and I went to a bigger cabin. And the guy said, what would you like? I said, I'll have a Coca-Cola, please. He said, certainly. So he poured out a Coca-Cola, but I just caught him, he put the glass up to the optics. And he put in what we call flash, which is uncut alcohol. He put that into my glass, and I had to leave it. And I was parched. But I had to leave that drink. I went back to my cabin, I got my big book out, and I wrote in my big book, which I've still got at home today, that if you're getting well, we need other AA members to talk to and to share with. I've never forgotten that, because I was totally isolated. And the desert dogs and the camels are not interested in our program. But the big book got me through it. Now, from then on, I moved on. I got married. I'm still with the same wife today, and she took a hell of a gamble. We were brought up on the same council estate, and she'd heard that I was a drunk, but had never known me drink. My wife has never known me drunk. And we got married, and we brought up a family, and I'm a granddad today. In fact, on the way out tonight, before my friend Andy and Sharon and Jack and everyone else picked me up tonight to bring me in, thank you for that, Andy, to get me here safe and sound. I'll see you later. And my grandchildren said, where are you going, Grandad? I said, I'm just going out to a meeting. Now, they don't know anything about AA. I've got twins that are 9 years of age now. But one day they will know. I always hope and pray that they'll never smell alcohol on their granddad's, you know, mouth, or that they'll never see me in the insanity of drinking. I always say to people, when people say, how are you doing, little man? How are you getting on? I say, I'm doing all right. But if they really want to know how I'm doing, I say, bring the wife. Because she'll tell you exactly what program I'm on. I was 10 years sober. Well, I had a little tiff one day, but I was 10 years sober. A little tiff with the wife. Not a big thing, just a little tiff. And I lived in Farnborough. Sunday morning, we had a wood fire, so I went, did a bit of logging. Came back, and we'd had a tiff. She locked me out. And I said, open the door, let me in. She said, go away, I've had enough of you today. Go and clear off, go with your AA mates and do what you want to do. I said, if you don't let me in, I said, I'll smash them doors down. Of course, being alcoholic, if we say something, we've got to do it. So we had a bay window. And she went to the bay window, and she said, I was like a demented little dwarf. She said, I was like one of them people. I got the axe out the back of the car because I'd been logging. I said, are you going to open that door? She said, no. So I smashed it down. 10 years sober now. Smashed it down. We had an inner door. She locked that as well. So I said, you go open that door? She said, so I smashed that down. So when I got in, cool as a cucumber that she was, she said, go on, why don't you smash the house up? She had, in fact, she said, I'm just going to bring your AA mates because I want to know what sort of program you're on. And she did. She rang my AA buddies and they came around. And they said, come on, little man, I think we better spend a bit more time going to AA and certainly a bit more time on this program. And I think we better take this a bit more serious. I've never had to take an axe to the doors again. But it goes to show that insanity can return regardless of how long we've been sober. I went to another meeting and I heard a guy share that he prayed for the power to stay sober today. And I said to myself, that's good enough for you, pal. That's good enough for me. So I pray every morning for the power to stay sober today, not tomorrow, not next week, not next month, or not next year, only today. And I also pray, and I learned this at AA as well, a very important thing for me. I pray that God enters my heart and my mind before I do, so I can have a fair and balanced view on things. I want to be a fair man today. I want to be a balanced guy today. I don't be acting towards that on a Sunday morning. 10 years sober, I'd say, hey, what sort of insanity is that? But my wife often reminds me of it. She's seen recovery. She's seen recovery the hard way. And I'm very fortunate. I'm not going to go on much longer because I'll see the little things flashed away and that. But I am very comfortable in my own skin today, but it's taken a while to get there. I've had the worst 6 years of my recovery. I've been sober, as I say, I think it's over 13,900 days now. It's an awful lot of days, a day at a time. I've had a heart attack 6 years ago. I've had a triple heart bypass. I've had a gallbladder removed. I've had cancer on the head. You can see a big scar right across my head. At all times, I thought, this is tough. This is painful. I've had two operations this year on my kidneys. I'm waiting for another operation on my kidneys. I've known an awful lot of pain. I've known an awful lot of ill health. But you know what? I've never lost my faith and I've never lost my power to pray. In fact, it got to the point that before I went down from a triple heart bypass, I actually completed my fifth step. I had my triple heart bypass 5 years ago. I was 33 years sober when I thoroughly, I think you shared that as well, thoroughly completed my step five. There was two things I was going to take to the grave with me. But that night I called a priest and he came and I got those two things off my chest. And I felt good about it. So for me, I'm very happy, Wayne, thank you for asking me along tonight. I'm happy with my friends that brought me here tonight. If I've shared one little word tonight that has helped a brother or a sister alcoholic in their recovery, one tiny little word is all I've got to share, then my being sober is worthwhile. It's worthwhile. And I'm going to leave it there. Thank you, Alexis. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.